It's Monday, September 30th, 2013, and welcome to episode 156 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Gioia.
Welcome to Tech Talk for Teachers, the show about teaching and learning with technology. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about getting organized. And also, Mike, I think you're going to talk a little bit about a new fishing attempt.
That's right. We had a fresh fish on campus today. I think we are being pretty effective with combating that.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about how to identify those fishing attempts and go from there. And then we'll finish up with our technology picks of the week. So here we go. Today's topic is about getting organized, and since it's the beginning of the semester, we thought we would share some of the things out there for students to get organized, work on their schedule a little bit, and just overall try to come up with a system, whatever works for you, and there's no one right way to do this. And one of the applications that I'm a huge fan of is OneNote, and for students, that's I think that's a good choice. It works across Windows, Android, and iOS. I just passed Mike my iPad and asking if he could figure out a way to draw freehand, and I can't find the tool for that. So it's crippled in that respect, and I use a pen or a stylus a lot. So that's a little bit limiting. The good news is whenever I synced it up for the very first time, this is what I really love about OneNote, is it syncs all of my notes. So, and I've got a ton of them. Essentially, OneNote is like taking the analog three-ring binder into the digital world. And for example, I have an EIU notebook, and I have different sections in there, different committees and things that I'm on. For students, they could be different classes. And once you record your notes, you can save it. In my case, I save it up to SkyDrive, and it syncs across all the different devices. So all those notes that I had written on my Surface are now available to me on the iPad.
That's nice.
So, and then the other thing I think we probably need to talk about a little bit this week, since it's so new, is iOS 7.
Yes.
So what was that last week? It's fairly recent.
Yeah, it was last week, Wednesday, basically when the internet almost shut down because everyone updating at once.
Yeah, here on campus, I updated my iPad that day because I wanted to see what it was about in 22 hours for the update.
It wasn't just us that were having problems. A lot of universities were. It was a large, considerably what we would say a large update, and it's such a concentrated area of devices utilizing one
right
pipe.
I saw several articles of universities across the country.
We compared from last week's Wednesday to Friday morning usage of bandwidth for Apple and iOS and any type of Apple updates to the week before, and we saw a 700% increase. So it was yes, it was very slow on campus, and of course we got blamed for it. You know, the Wi-Fi is terrible here, and it's really not that bad. It just was it was you know, pegging the line,
right?
You're in the red zone.
Hopefully sometime in the future they'll have like an Apple update server or something you can put here locally on campus.
Yeah, and that
would relieve a lot of, the Windows, we have the update server, so we prevent that traffic.
And we have that for antivirus here too. And we're working on getting the type of Apple update server here on campus because of issues like this.
And this was
only the mobile devices. It wasn't the AirBooks or any of that, right? Or
just iOS 7.
Just any, any like mobile, like that, your iPads. iPads, iPods, iPhones,
right?
All those had a major OS update. And it's really the first major OS update in, 7 years or something like that for Apple?
Yeah. So anyway, I was curious. I went out and got it, and then I loaded my OneNote program on there. And like I said, it's fine viewing some things. So if any listeners know a way, if I'm missing something, you know, please let me know. But
there are a lot of note-taking apps out there.
Yeah, and I have used Evernote in the past. I've used that, and then you were mentioning Notability is another good one.
Yes, yeah, that one's a pretty good one for your iOS. That one, you can download PowerPoint presentations directly to it, or it seems to work better if you do PDFs. Take your PowerPoint presentation, convert it to a PDF, and then it's pretty neat. My partner, she's used it a lot. She's completely digital. I don't even think she has a notebook anymore. And it's nice because, like, I'm left-handed, so when I take notes, you know, I write left to right, so I'm actually writing over what you know I'm doing. And I always ran into that with pencils and stuff. I was smearing my stuff everywhere, and that kind of happens with this. But it has a little blocker. It looks like frosted glass that comes across so that you can just write and not have to worry about, you know, your hand dragging and causing the cursor to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then it syncs up to all the other Apple devices. And you can, then you can send it to Dropbox if you need to.
Yeah.
And things like that. So that one, I've seen it work pretty efficiently, for Apple devices.
Yeah. The other thing, you mentioned the PDFs and things with OneNote. That's one of the great things. You have a screen clipping tool. You can go out there, clip anything with the web. And what I love about for research papers is you can go out and clip a website, and it gives you a date and time stamp as well as a URL where you made that web clipping.
Nice.
So whenever you go back and do, like, your, you know, your references and things, everything is right there, organized. And if you didn't take extensive notes, you can go back and revisit that web. Yeah. It is just so nice for that type of application. Also, the PDFs and things, you know, on the Windows side of things, it does support the pen input. It has Palm Block, and you can overwrite on top of that. You know, in some of the other apps, you have to get a, you know, a different app. You mentioned Dropbox, which you probably have to sign in with a different username and ID for that.
Which you should, but...
Yes, the security people will say you should. But the SkyDrive, that's all integrated with one, so I have that one account. And, you know, the other really nice thing is the OneNote syncs to my phone. So every note that I have out there on my SkyDrive, I have available, you know, right here, and it syncs immediately. So whenever I walk out of a class, I make some notes, and it'll sync immediately and be, you know, up to date with what I have. And it works out pretty good. The other one, the Evernote, I used to use Evernote quite a bit, but it doesn't quite have the structure like the OneNote, and I kind of like having the organization out there thinking like the three-ring binder type thing.
There was one I saw called Share, it was Share My Whiteboard or Whiteboard Share, and I need to look into that, and that was one where you can take pictures of in a classroom.
That'd be...
and use them to study with, too. And I was like, okay, that was pretty interesting. And then, yeah, the other things that I came across, just the voice recording and then voice-to-text converters and all that.
And that's the other thing with
Notability
is that you can sit there and record your lecture while you're taking notes. It does it at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think OneNote does that, too.
Yeah, OneNote does that. And what's nice, I don't know if Notability will do this, but as you write a note, if you hit playback and you jump down to like the third paragraph down and click on that word, it will automatically fast forward to the audio to that. So it syncs your notes up with the audio. Or video. It will do the same thing with video. Although you have to really watch, you know, how much space you're taking up because you're recording.
Yeah. And I don't know if that one does it, if Notability does it. Like I said, I wish I was went back to school or was taking my undergrad classes now, because I remember having the 8-inch three ring binder with all my notes and sitting
keeper.
There
well
this is pretty massive for and all the notes we took in electrical engineering was just and in which you could just take a picture of the chalkboard that the professor was writing on and then be able to note it up and try not I think we wasted most of our time just trying to draw circuit diagrams to match the professors as opposed to listening to what he was saying.
I just gave a presentation to some of our undergrads the other day, and this is a question I'm starting to ask them, and it surprises me a little bit. You know, I mentioned, you know, OneNote, Notability, Evernote, some of the different apps out there and how many people were using them. And right now, you know, not scientific or anything, I'd say less than 10% of the students are, you know, using these electronic means. And the advantage is it's searchable. You know, you can type in a search term and it'll take you exactly there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's also nice. Like I remember we trying to do something and the professor's like, oh, I forgot this part. And then go back.
Right.
And, you know, on your, and you've used that whole space on your notes and he just erases a little section and you're like, oh, how am I going to squeeze this in, draw in arrows? It's all complicated. This, you can just move it and
right here in OneNote is called insert space, so you just come down here and say I need that
need
much
to add
space.
Something there. Yeah. So Sydney, seeing how you're an instructor professor, do you see using that for, like, do you have a lot of, like, instructor notes, like teaching notes, and using something like this and prepare your notes that way as opposed to writing it down on paper? I don't know if you just get up there and do it on the fly or...
No, I mean, I still use... I'll have one or two PowerPoint slides to kick off just kind of the stage setter and that, you know. And then from that, go into what we're doing in class. But I've never used it to put my notes in order. That's funny you said that, because I'd never thought about that until
I've been thinking that about that a lot as far as the pedagogy and things involved with some of the ways that we structure our lessons and things. And one of the things that I think is very valuable to the students is, one, like the PowerPoints. Some people won't hand out a PowerPoint until after they do the presentation.
I can't stand that.
I know.
So, you know, one of the advantages here is you can send it as an email or whatever. They can import it. There's a feature called Send to OneNote, and it just imports directly into it, and you can annotate, like you were saying, with Notability right over the top of it. And you're not spending that mental energy, you know, copying down, you know, everything the instructor is saying. You can focus that attention on the material, on the content, which is where it should be. And then because it's saved out on SkyDrive, if I so choose, I can immediately, if I want to, I can make that link public, or I can copy a set of email addresses in and say, all right, you have permissions to see these notes. So it's kind of a real-time reinforcement of everything that we talked about in class. And then I'm going to mention a third thing here, pedagogically, is, you know, been doing a lot with the flipped classroom and doing the videos and things with Camtasia on the Surface Pro and things. We're asking a lot for a teacher or instructor, you know, to be out there doing, you know, these Hollywood-style productions and, you know, posting this stuff publicly out there for everybody to see. But what I would suggest is you assign a set of homework and you ask the students, okay, what problem gave you particular problem? It's like, you know, I can't work them all, but I will work one using a screencast recording. I'll work that through there, and then I can post that up immediately after the lecture to YouTube. And there's this flipped classroom movement going on. There's a lot of people across the nation are, you know, really starting to experiment with that. And because the tools become affordable and it's just clicking a record button to record everything you do with the screen and record your voice at the same time, the technology is not the barrier that it once was.
And I could see, like, using with the smart board application, because we have a lot of smart boards here. You have your PowerPoint presentation up on your smart board, you make an annotation or a note additional on top of it, and then you click, saves it, automatically sends it to your class, because they're linked in at the same time in that classroom environment. Then they have your notes right there, and, you know, I think it's just more streamlined as opposed to the student, I don't want to say wasting time writing down, because it does add some muscle memory there, but I found when I was learning in my undergrad, I would get distracted by making sure I was drawing this diagram correctly, and the teacher's speaking all this information, which I should be retaining and learning, but I'm too busy making sure my diagram's right for my notes, you know? And it's just interesting.
And a lot of that deals with what you're teaching to whom, because different courses lend themselves. Because I was just thinking, we were just in a social studies methods class this week talking about students' textbooks. And this is teachers who want to teach elementary and middle level. And so how to help students use their textbooks and identify things like topics and unit headings and things like the important parts of of their textbook. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I could have pulled the text up on the whiteboard and then highlighted, but they would have been watching that because only about half of them have any devices with them that they're using. Not every student in my class has a laptop or an iPad or anything they bring with them. A couple have their phones, and it's like, well, no, that's too small. You can't really use that for the class. And so you have that you're dealing with, and that's the same thing when you get in the schools. Which kids have access to which technology and which devices?
And I think that makes it hard for a professor or a teacher now, because we're in that I think we're in that transition period of going from paper, you know, paper and writing down your notes to let's make this electronic, and having the, you know,
I've made that switch about 90%, and you know, there are times when we're going to need the paper. But I've pretty much made that switch.
I prefer paper to this day. Well, my learning styles and my strengths to organize myself, I need paper. I still use a legal notepad and write stuff and draw on it and that instead of any of my devices, because for me, that's just how I work best.
Mm-hmm. Well, my other reason I asked you that question is, mm-hmm. is I'm kind of going through this in my office, as my predecessor kept a lot of paper notes and documents and stuff in paper, and none of that's electronic, and it's sitting behind me, and there's maybe some good information in there, but there's also need to retain the history. So now I'm in the process, and you know, it makes me frustrated that I'm sitting here scanning and scanning all these documents and getting them in an electronic storage space that's backed up every day and then shredding all the paper because we don't need the paper. And some of the stuff is sensitive and confidential, and if someone were to break into my office, they would have access to that. Where this way, it's going to be very hard to get access to this documentation.
And but I write it, and then I toss my written notes, and I convert it electronically, and then the next time I teach it, I have that, and I tweak off of that and go and go and go. But when I'm starting anything from scratch,
it's
always paper.
I won't say our generation or whatever, but that's the way we grew up through school, and there's, like you said, a lot of muscle memory and things. And even in OneNote, I prefer a pen input rather than typing. Mm-hmm. Their students will be out there, you know, typing on the keyboard. But there really is something, a mental process or something with the hand and the mind going back and forth doing that you do not get, you know, typing on a keyboard or drawing, you know, doing those illustrations and things. And that's, again, why I like the freehand form, because you're not limited, you know, to a keyboard or anything. You can always take a picture of it, do a snapshot. The snipping tool is great. Just go out there, put it in. Or like you said, if a professor's up on a board writing and writing and writing, you know, if they don't erase it, you can just at the end of class take a snapshot, you know, with your phone or your tablet, whatever it is.
I had a terrible professor that would sit there and he'd be writing and it. Well, he was right-handed, so he'd be writing, and then in his other hand was the eraser, and he was just like this, and he would just fill up boards and boards of information. Yeah. You're like, you're struggling just to keep up.
And the cool thing about all of this, I think, is that you can find what works for your learning style and use it.
Right.
And so you don't have to do it one way, and that's just like the text-to-voice and voice-to-text and all of those things. It's like if you know how your mind works. I know I'm a timeline lay it out person, and that's how I have to do things, and that, and so other people reading it doesn't do it. They need to hear it, and so if they have that option, so more than anything, it's nice to be able to not force every student to do the same thing.
Well, absolutely. But, I mean, that's good teaching. You know, there's many different ways, and you have to hit all those modalities to,
which makes it harder for professors and instructors, because they need to actually teach in that method. They got to teach and cover. They got to teach that maybe the what you would call the traditional way and this the
but
new
then you're differentiating
way.
Too and trying to
yeah there's a lot more to teaching than just going up and giving the lecture and saying here everything is, you know, we're completely out of that mode now of, you know, the transfer of information. We're into this active learning, the engaged learning, and involving the learner, differentiation, and again, technology makes that possible because we don't have to be doing all of this, you know, these different lessons in lockstep. You know, if a student gets ahead, here you go. Here's
and just
some more resources.
Right. And not, you know, I worry sometimes you have a classroom where everybody has, they buy the class sets of tablets and things, and everybody has to use it. And it's like,
I'm starting to see that trend too. It seems like more and more companies, the big major companies, are out there doing the predefined curriculum. And here's, you know, it's kind of like the old textbook, you know, we're on page 232 today, and it's like we're on this lesson. I think we need to really watch that as teachers.
Right, because then the next year, if they're using a different method or they don't have that or they transfer to a different school or something, is it so prescribed that they don't know how to think on their own whenever that mode of teaching changes on that? So, yeah, that's the hard part, keeping it individualized.
So just two or three apps there. Like I said, I'm a huge OneNote fan. Mike, you're using Notability a little bit. And then what was the other one we talked about? Evernote is the other huge one out there. I will also mention something else that's kind of nice about the OneNote. There's also an Office web app. So, you know, that problem is like we don't have a device out there. Mm-hmm. I can send that link. It doesn't matter if they're on Android, iOS. They can just open up a browser, and here it is. And you can either choose to give them edit control or just view, which, you know, most instructors will probably only give them view control. But the other thing that you can do once you do that, once you give somebody access, then they can copy that section from your notes into their notebook or whatever, whether it's used Evernote or Notability or whatever it might be. So like I said, whatever works for you, but it really has helped help organize some things. And the recording of audio is kind of a really nice thing that as I take notes, I can jump down to a word, and that's just a really neat technology. Up next, we have our security spotlight, and once again here at EIU, phishing is in the air. This morning, I received an email and promptly reported it to our EIU ITS crack security team.
Me too.
Yeah, we had another phishing attempt today, this one wasn't bad. It wasn't great either, and
it's a pretty obvious
attempt. Yeah, you should rate them.
No, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, we don't want to encourage.
Oh, that's
anyone.
Right, because we don't want the really. Yeah
we don't want to encourage them to come back, but. What was good about this phishing attempt was that it was reported a lot. This one and the one before that earlier this week was actually to the point I would say my email mailbox was being spammed by the users on campus for reporting it, which is great. I'd rather be spammed in my mailbox from users reporting it and asking if it's legitimate or not than nothing happening and then getting accounts compromised. Right. And then we get blacklisted, and it just gets worse and worse. So if you go to our ITS blog, actually, we have a blog out there. Our media guy, Tim Z, he just released an article about phishing on campus because it's in a good trend, and I call it the snowball effect, which can happen both ways. The snowball effect is the bad way is that we do nothing. People get phished, they get their accounts compromised, then the phishers or the hackers use their accounts to send out more phishing attempts, and it just continually gets worse and worse. Right. And worse until
snowballs. Yeah,
until we're blacklisted because we're spamming thousands and thousands of messages to users out in the internet, clogging up our bandwidth and everyone else's bandwidth, as opposed to the good way is the snowball effect. The good snowball, the nice clean white one, is that I get spammed a lot. A lot of people are reporting it. We can go in and do our things that we need to do. We can block the website here for users on our network. We can block that. We can do some advanced filtering on the web servers. And then getting the notification out through Twitter. And this one today was something we started new. Today's phishing attempt lesson in what we're doing. And I'll take the email and then kind of point out where you can identify that it's actually a phishing attempt. Mm-hmm. Like this one, the subject was very generic for an official university email. It just said letter from Eastern Illinois University. Mm-hmm. It doesn't explain anything at all what it is. It had a click here, hyperlink that took you to something that's not a university website.
Yeah, and if you do the mouse over, you could see that.
Yeah, you can do it. And just hold your mouse over it, and it'll tell you where it's going to send you. And this one went to...
But don't click.
Yeah, don't click it. Went to valiant.com somewhere not even in the U.S. And then the final one was that it says all right reserved, copyrighted at, copyright 2013 at Eastern Illinois University.
Right.
And you'll see that a lot because the people who are trying to fish people don't realize that universities aren't really in the copyright business. Mm-hmm. And they kind of just group them in as a corporate business as it is. So you can go out, if you go out to our Twitter account, and you can actually see these photos.
I'll provide a link out to the Twitter account, and also I'll do a screenshot of this because I think this is very good for the education standpoint. I think the awareness on campus is definitely, you know, much better than it was a couple of years ago, for sure.
Yes.
So, I'm reporting them because, like you said, you can block them. So the quicker that you can get that information out there, the quicker that you can block them, that would be just less chance, you know, less risk of somebody else going out there and accidentally clicking on one or whatever. So I'll provide a link in the show notes to that, as, along with a screenshot of that, because I do like this. And since it's on our Twitter feed, you know, you can follow the EIU InfoSec Twitter account.
Yes.
And every day, if something happens tomorrow or next week, you know, you're just kind of educating as we go along.
So. Right. And we're working on our website also to have a, what we call the fish tank, that will kind of display these type of messages too. So users can go back and look at them and get a whole bunch at once if they want. We're revamping our whole website. Taking us a little time to get to this one because we want to do some more special things like removing the links out of the pictures and stuff, and we kind of want to automate it all so we don't have to do it manually because it can get intensive if we have to do it manually.
Okay, well, that's a good idea. Thank you. My technology pick of the week this week is a new YouTube feature that's called Audio Library. And YouTube has recently come out with a copyright-free access to audio, some music available for you to use out there in your YouTube videos. And when you log into your YouTube account, it's kind of hidden a little bit. You have to go into the video manager, and I'll provide a screenshot again in the show notes. But there, underneath creation tools, you will see a new option, and they have it highlighted in red here. It's called Audio Library. And I don't know how many different ones they have here, a couple dozen it looks like. But these are some free MP3 music style background type music. I'm just going to click on a couple just to give you a sample here. Different one. A different one.
Put us to sleep.
Yeah.
Wake you up. Elevator music.
Let's see. I can probably.
Do they have a laugh track?
Yeah. No. There's one right there. All these different ones out there. So, wake you up here a little bit. There's some different ones out there. There's a little download button, so you can download that track, and then you can incorporate that into your YouTube videos, and hopefully you won't get pulled from YouTube for using copyrighted
somebody
music
else's.
Because or that, or they'll mute your track. You know, you might go to
just mm-hmm. video, no audio.
Yeah, see just the video. So I think that's something valuable out there for the classrooms and things, and it's just one thing. You don't have to worry about the copyright, and it gives you some variety and things out there. So I thought that was a nice thing for them to do.
All right. Well, I started, as we're going back to school and I'm talking to teachers and that, more students are coming to school with, you know, iPads and Nexuses and different types of tablets and things like that that they're using. And so I started looking at the education apps and some of the things that were out there. And the Google Play Store has, you know, a big list. Theirs is a little more, you have to know what you're looking for. You really have to put in there a specific grade level or topic. I will say the iTunes, their education categories or education collections organized well too. And so it's one of those where we have parents giving students these tools or even schools giving students these and really not preloading them with apps or letting folks know what apps are the most beneficial. So I thought, okay, I'm going to see what kind of lists are out there. And I only looked at recent ones within the last month or so. And so I found about 10 of them that I really liked, and we'll put those in the show notes and that. But I was impressed because there were a couple of them that were specifically for students with learning disabilities. Mm-hmm. And so these were created by professionals that, you know, these are things that could help students that need those. And a lot of them were organizational skills and things like the note-taking and that we were talking about, and then how to recreate, and we were talking about this too, different ways that we learn and teach, and ways to make flashcards and different things out of their notes that students could do. And then there were a lot of them for college students, and sites like Consumer Reports, BET, I think Men's Health had apps for college students, so there were a lot of them out there for college students. One of the things, and again, we had Evernote, voice to text, and text to voice, and different things. But a lot of them also included Mint for budgeting, and then a lot of time management. Mm-hmm. Calendars and reminders for assignments, where to keep your homework assignments, how to set up, you know, so you're not doing the whole assignment at the last minute, but maybe setting markers for yourself that by this date you want to have this much done on your research paper. And on this date you want to have something else done. And so where you want to go with those different things. And I expected to find goofy stuff, but I got to say, I was really impressed with the quality of the list and some neat things that they listed. And then, of course, there's a zillion list for teachers as well. But some are education sites, some are just popular magazines.
I see you have a link there for Edudemic. Right. 770 best apps, so that'll keep you busy for a while.
Right. And so, these that I printed out because I still print things and that. But I have Edudemic, National Center for Learning Disabilities, and the Consumer Report ones. And so don't just limit yourself to the Google Store and Google Play Store and apps, the App Store on your Apple things, but actually go out and look what other people have tried and see what's out there. So it ate up a lot of my time because I ended up looking at a lot of these things.
Yeah, but providing, these lists are helpful in that regard, that, somebody's went to the effort to go through and sort through some of those.
There are probably more teachers out there or even schools now that are starting, because I did find a couple of school districts had lists. Yeah. Of recommended apps. And so, you have these homework helper things.
We'll probably get to the point, as opposed to going to like Walmart and there's a list of the supplies you need. There'll be a list of apps.
Apps.
That you need.
Yeah. And I don't know that necessarily all of, that goes into what's the difference between an app and a website.
Right.
And so I think a lot of people don't get that either, that it's like...
And not to overlook the websites, because there's a lot of valuable information.
Heck yeah.
And you don't have to go through the hassle of installing everything on 30
different ones. Absolutely. And so, the apps do not replace the websites.
Right. But I do see, like QR codes and things, you'll see a lot of information advertised, and that's nice, especially if it's a website, because you just click the QR code and it takes you right there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so we'll put these links up there as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to continue on. I have a pretty interesting app about getting organized. It's called Pocket, and I've seen it work. It works well with Apple devices. But Pocket is pretty good when, Twitter and all the different places you go, like you may see like an article or a, like maybe a professional like paper that you want to read, but you don't have time. And you're scanning through and you just have like 5 minutes to kind of just look at the news or something like that. And Pocket lets you save those articles, those links into a localized area that's synced across all your devices, so that when you do have a moment or maybe 30 minutes and you're not doing anything, you can load these up and you'd be like, I really wanted to read that article that I saw, 3 weeks ago. You don't have to remember where you saw it. You don't have to search the internet. You can just go to Pocket and be like, here it is. Here's the title. Click on it, open it up and read it. And so it's just a way to get more organized and maybe expand.
So is it a bookmark, or is it actually save like the PDF?
It will actually save the PDF, or it'll bookmark it. It depends what format of the thing you're trying to read. If it's a web page, it might save it on like Apple. It might save it as the iReader, and then have it.
Well,
down
that's what
in
I was
going to
ask. Is it an account that they like save it in the cloud?
It's a free app. So I'm not sure the whole back end, if it's like saved out in the cloud.
But like if you have, say your iPhone and your iPad, could you go to your iPad? If you marked it on your iPhone, you could go to your iPad and see
so
it.
So it's got to be in the cloud somewhere.
Okay.
So that it, like I said, it syncs across all devices and not just mobile devices. It syncs if you have like an iMac and you have Pocket, it will sync to that device too. So if you're on your laptop taking a break, you can do that.
So what if I don't, if you don't have Wi-Fi access, unless you've saved it as a hard copy or type of PDF or something, it won't access it, right?
If you have synced your device before, and so if you saved it,
copied it down to it.
Yeah, if you saved it and then it syncs before, it'll be there.
Okay, so. Very cool. I'm going to check it out. Good one.
That wraps it up for episode 156 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom.
I'm Cindy Rich.
I'm Mike Joya.
Keep on learning.